All right. Our next presentation, EAS Text Message Via Radio, is our presenter, Steve Johnston, who started taking apart radios as a youngster and became a ham radio operator at age 13. His professional career started at Susquehanna Radio Corporation for 20 years and then shifted to public radio in 2000 as Director of Engineering and Operations for Boise State Radio. In 2005, he moved to Wisconsin Public Radio as Director of Engineering and Operations, where he's also my boss, so I can't say anything bad about him. You do look great today, by the way. Steve has a BA in History and an MBA in Business Administration. He is a longtime member of SBE, a certified at Senior Radio Engineer, and a Networking Technologist levels. He holds both radio telephone and radio telegraph licenses from the FCC. Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Johnston.
Good afternoon. Thanks, everybody. It's nice to see so many friends and at the show. I'm always pleased by that. Kevin, you'll get your raise later. No problem. So today I'd like to talk to you in a sort of continuation of what we did last year. You may recall we had a case study at Wisconsin Public Radio of a very comprehensive implementation of program-associated data for our radio operations. That is to say, information text messaging that flows along with the programming and appears on radios. Now, the two types of radios that we're trying to reach with this system are FM radios that have the RDS decoders inside, and they can display on the front panel either sometimes a very small amount of text, but sometimes more significant, and it's getting better all the time. And then also HD radios, which have a fairly elaborate presentation model for program-associated data, and usually the radio displays are fairly large. I should define those terms. I'm saying PAD, it's program-associated data, but it's also taken a new term in recent years, PSD, program service data, and that's trying to get at the idea that it is definitely related to the service that we're providing to the listeners, and the content is important, both textually and audibly. Then we have a special case of our broadcasting, which is the emergency alert system. It's a warning system that's used by broadcasters to deliver important information, something that's either threatening to life or property by the listeners or viewers in the case of television. And the good thing about EAS is that the messages are targeted by location, so the geography limits the spread of those messages. Now, as I mentioned, we were here last year describing what we had done in the previous year to get this general idea working. We successfully accomplished that, and it's been running fine ever since. We've added a few more features, but it's basically things like talk show topic, the name of the shows, music title and artist, weather reports, that's timely information that flows automatically, and anything we might want to promote on the stations. But it struck us that it would be good if we could include emergency alerts in this. And it's often talked about at conferences that, oh yes, we should do EAS and have it appear on the radios, but how many people actually do it? And it shouldn't be that difficult, but is it? So I thought I'd make that a case study and then share that with you today. So you have these radios that can show things like the weather forecast, a little paging through here. You know, it's gonna show you a few words at a time. What if you could look at the radio and see what the emergency alert was about? We need to define the problem, and I happen to come across this website, Science Buddies, and it has some good advice for us, but you really want to boil down to what are you trying to accomplish? What is the problem or need that you're trying to satisfy? Who are you trying to satisfy, you know, whose need? And why is this important to do? Now, the question arose immediately because it's so popular these days. Shouldn't we have EAS messages on our web streams? And this has been pointed out by listeners and employees alike. No, they shouldn't be there because those listeners are all over the world. They're not just in the local area, and EAS is about the local geography to a particular radio station. Now, there might be other forms of emergency alerting that could be appropriate for a web stream, but not EAS. And so we wouldn't be needing to worry about getting the text about an EAS message onto the player's display on a computer. Where are we going to get this emergency information? It's geographically coded, and it's related to an individual station. So you have to be sure to associate the two very closely. You don't want to have the text for an emergency in another town displaying on yet a third town's radio station. The text could come from the EAS system box itself that has quite an elaborate way of generating closed captioning for television, and that seemed like it could work out. So it's easiest for me to use our flagship station as the guinea pig. That's WHA in Madison. It's on AM 970 and runs HD, so it would have the ability to show text and was showing text on HD radios, as well as our translators that also carry that same programming here in Madison on the FM band. And of course, the main point is it's easy to work on because it's right down the hall from my office. So the first stage is to get the HD pad and the RDS on those FM translators. But we have a lot of other stations, and we got to think about, you know, when we're designing this system, what will work as a model for the whole network. We've got three individual program services airing on 34 different stations all around the state. And we determined that our listeners could benefit, the listeners to those stations could benefit from information on serious alerts, that is to take it to the highest level, not weather watches, not tests. We wouldn't want to go that far. And we would want them visible on the FM radios with RDS, as well as any HD radios, both AM and FM. So the goal was, boiled down, if a listener hears the alert tones on the air, they could glance over at the radio, and in that time frame, you would have the alert message displayed there. And it would say something very simple and clear, such as a tornado warning, this listening area, or something like that. Now, I had this drawing for several presentations. It's a general view of our whole program-associated data flow, and it's really hard to read. I can get a printed copy if you'd like. But I'm trying to show that we are adding in on these local branches for each individual station, that we're adding in a new source. This is the EAS decoder-encoder. Now, you'll find it's straightforward in many cases that the EAS equipment is located in the same room even as the gear you want to drive or the pad server that's going to organize this, but sometimes not. And it struck me that Ethernet might be a way to connect these various boxes together. I'm seeing an Ethernet jack on the back of this Sage end deck here, so that looks promising. I talked to Harold Price at Sage Alerting, and he indicated that the NDEC did indeed have the ability to send a file by FTP, and there would be hopes that RDS encoders and HD gear could use that data directly. So he was visualizing a direct connection between the EAS NDEC and the destination device. It might be the HD exciter, it might be an RDS generator for the subcarrier of an FM. But that would bypass our Center Sage software that we're using to sort of organize all the different pad messaging. So the approach that Sage was advocating was you would only have EAS messages on your station. It wouldn't be among other messaging you would have. And I knew from past experience, as well as knowing about the captioning for television, that the Sage NDEC unit has the ability to send out EAS message text on the serial port. And that's been done for a number of reasons, both radio and television. That looked like it might be more promising. I could somehow import that into our center stage processing system and route those messages to the right place. I talked to Stu Buck. He's the main guy at Arctic Palm Software, the makers of Center Stage. And he said that he had a product in mind that could work for this. It was a version of their weather system that is made for plucking text off of a website, and usually the National Weather Service, and turning it into pad data for radio. And it looked like it could work. I wasn't too pleased with the way it was sort of a hodgepodge. It was just an add-on to this existing weather module. But I'll give it a try. We're just getting started. So we're talking about a serial connection. That's really going to be only convenient if the boxes are fairly close to each other. One room, next room, something like that. Not so good if they're in different buildings, different floors of the same building, something like that. But I knew that we had the IP network capability, you know, Ethernet connections in all these locations. So I envisioned using a tunneling system to get that serial data through the Ethernet. And I'm really just visualizing it. I hadn't thought about who's making a box like this or who can do it. But I want to connect the serial port on the Sage EAS unit that is going to generate ASCII text, send that somehow magically across the Ethernet, pick it up again, and import it into the PAD server. So it becomes one more message in our queue of messages with its own priority and its own routing. The internet search reveals there are such products ready to go off the shelf. And there are some made by broadcast vendors. There's some made by more computer-oriented companies. Here we've got Lantronics products being marketed by GridConnect. And this is where I ended up buying it. But there's a lot of sources. So these are devices that take in a serial connection and packetize it and put it on the Ethernet. I'll give you a little close-up here. And they had a model known as the NET232 Plus. That looked like it would do the job. You can see in this drawing here the concept. You've got the EAS box here that's going to generate ASCII text on the serial output at some speed. The NET232 would convert that into packetized data somehow across the internet. It would be read by another NET232 back into serial and go into a COM port on the PC. But all I had to do was scroll down a little further, and I realized, and I probably should have thought of it myself, why can't the already on the Ethernet PAD serving computer interpret that directly, in a sense have a virtual serial port. So no direct connection, it would all be inside the computer happening. EAS generates serial data of an emergency message. It's put onto the Ethernet, picked up by this computer on the Ethernet directly, and then routed data. The data is then routed to the right part of the software. The COM port redirector was a piece of free software that was available from the same companies that make these products, in this case the Lantronics products, but almost all the companies had the same mentality behind their products, so that you didn't have to buy two. You only need to buy one of their devices. And a virtual COM port, you might have known them fairly frequently when you put a USB serial converter on your computer, you'll see you can have a whole long list of possible COM numbers. Very high numbers. Well, there's no physical COM ports. Those are all virtual COM ports. And that's the same concept as what we're working with here. Now, there is one issue. The COM port redirector might not meet the expectations of the application software. And what can happen is that, and I've seen this happen with other devices that they're trying to do this stuff, they get the data and they don't say anything more for a while. And the COM port is closed. And then next time it goes, it has to reopen. So you can get into latency problems and so on. You want to keep this connection up all the time. It's not going to have hardly any data in it under normal circumstances, not until an emergency strikes. But you want to keep it active at all times. Here's a look at the manager software for this NET232 device. You can see there's a lot of options that can pretend to be COM ports 1 through 10. It can have a lot of different configurations, some of them related to that keep alive concept, that it's going to send a periodic packet with no new data. Just say, I'm here. Don't close the port. So it looks a little complicated, but it was almost correct right out of the box with the default settings. But you got to get the details right. There's no getting around things like the serial port, baud rate, bit rate, the data format, how many error bits, and all the usual stuff that we've encountered with serial connections. You need the same version of that in the virtual side, but it's a little simpler there because it's not having to come back as real hardware. So on the Sage EAS unit, you're going to tell it which of its ports to use. And you're going to say, what format of data would you like it to send out? And in this case, I selected the generic character generator, again, meant for a variety of closed captioning generators, I assume. And also, I've seen it used for message boards and things like that. And then I said it should be at 9600 baud, 8N1, the usual. You can see in this excerpt from the manual for the Sage that you have a fairly wide variety of formats, and it also refers you then to the correct part of the manual to know how to configure it. So I'm choosing the generic CGEN. Even more on the next page. Fortunately, the Sage NDEC character generator puts out a number before each message that indicates what they would classify the severity of the message to be, or the emergency, actually. Level 1 messages are classified as those that are the direct threats to life and property. Weather warnings are a good example of that, a tornado warning. The level 2 messages are more of watches. So those are things might happen, not things are happening, but things just might happen. And level 3 messages are tests. When you go in to organize those severity settings, you can get into the Sage NDEC and make adjustments if you'd like. It also shows you here exactly what you can expect as far as the characters that come out. And then there's a start a message and end a message indicators. So that's going to be easy for the software on the other end in the PAD server to interpret. As I mentioned, we're only going to be working with the level 1 messages, those that are threats to life and property. And there's a limit to what some radios can display. Some are very short, so you're going to end up paging almost one word or even syllables of a word onto a display. Others, you get at least a few words in at a swipe. So this is what we settled on as our message formatting. Very simple. A tornado warning will be happening from this time to that time for our listening area. And it's going to automatically append that for our listening area. Because if you're hearing that radio station, you are automatically in the right place for this message. You don't have to define it any further. Now, first step, patch the darn EAS box out of the program line. I didn't run into this problem myself this time, but I had a lot of trouble when we first got our EAS equipment back in the 90s, and I would accidentally generate a test when I didn't mean to and things like that. So patch around it so that you can experiment to your delight. Now you've got that redirector software installed on the PAD serving computer. I just used Windows Hyperterminal. Couldn't be easier. Terminal program that we used to use a lot, I'm sure. A lot of you were in the day when lots of serial devices were out there. Not so much anymore, but it was waiting for me. It was still there. I think actually the computer I was on, it wasn't automatically installed, so I had to find it somewhere. Worked like a charm, though. So that let me just see that raw text coming in on the virtual serial port. Once I knew that was working correctly, then it was sensible to go ahead and configure this CAS weather, the special EAS version, to use that same COM port and see if it was getting those messages. Then I said, okay, now, center stage, what should you do with them when they come in? If you get a level warning alert or one of the other levels, what do you do with it? We want that first level, that top priority message, to go on to the stations that are defined in a little list. And those, in our case for this test, would be WHA and its translators. Again, another display that might be a little hard to read, but this is what you would see if you had a look at what's come in recently on this CS Weather EAS version. Now, if I can hopefully point this out clearly, you've got a level 3 here, a level 3, then there's a level 1. So the first two are at that level 3. They're just tests. And you can see the text. It says a broadcast station or cable system has issued a required weekly test. But the third one was a severe thunderstorm warning. And that's in level 1 category. I hope you can see that. So So that one would be forwarded, and it was. The very next action that was taken was this line was sent out to those stations who are destined to receive it. And you can see it says RDS : severe thunderstorm warning for listening area. And that would be sent to the radios, and the radio would, in its own way, they all are a little bit different, display that information. And we had another one of those. It's a busy night. Another thunderstorm warning. And here's a text that rolled out in response to that. So you can see how that works. And it went on. And it's worked smoothly since we did this some months back. Just to reanalyze this, hopefully make it clear, the box did nothing, or the software rather, did nothing for these first two. It received them, logged it, didn't send anything out. Then we get to level one, and it does send out a message. And so on in that busy weather night. Flood warning was the last one on the page here. I didn't look at the radio that time, but I evidenced other cases when I was testing. It's very satisfying to see that result, to see those emergency alert messages come through in a timely fashion. And then, of course, over the matter of months in the summertime, there's plenty of opportunities for this to be looked at. So I would hear the tones on the air, hear the message start, but let's say I couldn't hear it very well, but I could glance over at the radio, and there it is. Tornado warning, thunderstorm warning, whatever the case. The hope is that this system is useful for the listeners, obviously. The clue being that they might hear the alert tones, but sometimes the audio message isn't clear, particularly if they're using the voice synthesis method where it's a computer trying to speak. That can be very difficult for some people to interpret. We've also all had trouble in almost every state of the union with poor audio quality, I should say, on state-generated messages. And I say that, I've moved around the country, lived in different places. All state emergency management messages sound bad. So this gives another way, though, for people, hopefully, to get that information. Now we have the problem, even if it works on WHA right here in town, how are we going to get this out to other stations? Well, we have some more stations in the area, and I went ahead and configured it to drive those stations as well. That was straightforward. The next step, though, is to figure out how we're going to deal with this for stations all over the state who are in different EAS regions. So they can't really be driven by our EAS unit in Madison. They're going to have to be driven by the Sage NDEC unit that's right there in their own town. Example of the stations that we're dealing with, they're in, I don't know, six different regions of the EAS system for the state, something like that. So they're all going to have a variety of messages, and that is the way it should be, because EAS is about localism. EAS is about emergencies that are close to home. I want to take as many questions as possible. It seems like kind of a simple project, but it's one that I had not seen actually done before. Everybody talked about it, and I hadn't seen somebody do it. If anybody else has done this, it would be great for you to share your experiences, too. I see one in the back there.
What happens when you have multiples starting stacking? You know, a tornado warning, for instance, usually has a thunderstorm warning that goes with it and a flash flood warning, and you end up with like eight things, you know, especially in the Midwest here. How does the system say, I've got six of these, how do I time them out? Or is it last in?
It's first in, first out. And the timing is extremely fast. These are just a few characters of ASCII data at 9600, so that's not holding it up. The radio display refresh rate is probably the slowest part of it. And so you'll be cranking them out, and I suppose if you had a stack of them that long, the time that it takes for the actual message to play on the air is still longer, even with all those delays, is still longer than the time it takes the text to get there. So this concept that if someone hears it, they turn to the radio and have a look, there's still every chance that they're going to see the messages that they need. I think that the length of a typical EAS alert is much longer than any delay in the system. Yeah, one up front.
Does each text message just play once, or do you have it play three times and then
That's
out?
A good point. It is set to play several times, and it will continue until the time of the expiration of the alert. That's a feature of the CS Weather EAS software. It is, you can decide how you want to handle that. But the prioritization, it's more urgent, I suppose, right while the message is playing. So you get that connection between the sound and what's visible. So it plays, it's sent quickly several times at that time. And then later, it's just mixed into the normal queue of our various messages. And you'll continue to see it through the time of the alert. One in the center and one in the back.
How do you truncate the very verbose EIS warnings down to that short sentence?
Yeah, let me see if I can go back, get on the right page. The SAGE NDEC unit, and I think this would be true of the others as well, is already doing most of the work to truncate the message because it's already preparing it to go out either as a character-generated text on a television station or maybe to an LED sign in a radio studio, something like that. So this is the actual message in its entirety that's been received. So that is already, I think, truncated down quite a bit. It has the basics, though. It says what it is, when it is, what the nature of the problem is, and the priority level. Now, in the CS weather software, I get to say what I want to come through. So it says if it finds the words tornado warning, bring that through. Use the time to know when it should be sent, how long it should be sent, but don't send the time again. Just bring through those words, and then I automatically append the canned message for the listening area. As I didn't think of that at first, but then I saw it appearing on the radios as I was testing it, and I realized that was a phrase that sort of seemed to go with EAS and would help people actually understand what we're talking about, that there's the, it answers the question, where? So we got a tornado warning. Where? Oh, here. Okay.
I have a question. Have you thought about doing anything with AMBER?
This would automatically be in the priority one category.
Okay.
And would go through.
What
directly.
About actually getting that text, that weather program that you're talking about would also take care of decoding the text?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it doesn't really discern the difference. The four-hour listening area might not be quite as applicable, but it would, as I have it standing right now, would append that message. Maybe it works. I don't think it's too bad because it's redundant. People should know what they're listening to the radio in their own town, but that isn't necessarily clear to folks, at least as I talk to our listeners. Yeah, there's one.
Since you have this on your land, is there any special cautions or precautions you need to take to prevent it from getting hacked? The television EAS was hacked a year or so ago.
Yeah. Well, it's probably no better or worse than the fact that most people have the EAS box on their local network, in their office, in their studio complex, for the purposes of keeping the logs organized and that sort of thing. So you're not really adding any exposure. The connection to the EAS box is the serial device being turned in to the Ethernet. So you have a layer of connectivity protection there because it's only allowed to talk to the device with the same IP address that you've programmed into it. Not, you know, I didn't want to get into too much detail today, but you tell one box, here's your address and here's who you are allowed to talk to, another address. Likewise for the other end of the connection. So it ignores any traffic that doesn't have those addresses. Could you spoof that? Yeah, you could. So this needs to be on an internal LAN behind a firewall. It can't be living out on the ordinary internet. But we already have that technology in these locations. I do have concerns, though, about how to reach some of our transmitter sites which don't have connectivity. Have to figure that out. Some of them have the EAS box at the site, so it'll all be self-contained. Others not. Others have the EAS box in a central location serving multiple transmitter sites with audio. So there's complications. But if you already have a protected LAN, that's, in my opinion, completely enough security.
Steve, using the SAGE, I see the logic of that completely because you've got quite a bit of filtering with that. What about using something like MWIN or some of the FEMA streams that you may be able to get your hands on?
I wouldn't be as trustworthy of that. It may be a little bit like the recent CAP message problem that we ran into where a message was inappropriately addressed. At least with your using your own SAGE unit, you've already programmed it to be related to that radio station and its region, its geography. It has a chance, I think, of ignoring messages that it shouldn't get. If you took a feed directly off online sources, which would probably work most of the time, because it's going to tell you the regions of FIPS codes and all that sort of stuff. It certainly was possible. However, I can say that the software isn't ready for it. Somebody would have to write the software to reach out to that and sort of decode the message into a usable form. I wouldn't go that way if I had a choice to use the direct from the EAS unit, because it's already proved itself. But it won't stop somebody sending an erroneous message. Seems like that's about it. Thanks for your time. I'm certainly glad to talk to you about it later if you'd like.